With me tonight from the group called The Storytellers is Al Sanchez. Al, thanks for joining me.
Well, you're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Al, tell me where you grew up.
Well, I grew up in a city about 10 miles outside of Los Angeles, just east of it. It's called San Gabriel. Actually, San Gabriel was the first settlement. It was founded 10 years before Los Angeles, so I grew up in that city. My father was born in that city, and my mother was born close by, so we're all native Californians.
And go back a couple generations there.
Yes, we do.
So what was it that got you interested in music early on?
Well, I've always been interested in music as a little boy. In fact, I don't know if too many people know this, but I used to tap dance as a youngster, and with that, I was able to do a spot in a movie with Elizabeth Taylor back in 1950. It was one of her B movies called Love is Better Than Ever, and I sang and I tap danced in that movie.
Wow.
And, yeah, it was through my mother's encouragement. You know, she wasn't exactly one of these moms that push you all the time, but she did take me around to dance studios and where we did singing and dancing, and that's what got me started in singing, actually.
And who were you listening to? What kind of groups were you listening to?
As I got older? Well, a lot of the rhythm and blues. You know, we called it rhythm and blues back then. I guess they call it doo-wop now. But one of ours was the Rivoliers. Of course, the Orioles. Those were the first ones. The Midnighters with Hank Ballard and Johnny Ace. Actually, my sister was the one that got me started in the rhythm and blues. She used to buy the records and play them on our record player, and then I would sing along sometimes after I learned the words. That's how I got started.
So then how did you get into, say, organized singing?
I went to San Gabriel Mission High School, which is a Catholic high school, and we were in a glee club, and my cousin Ruben was in the glee club as well, and one of my best friends, Nick Delgado, in fact, he's the one that wrote You Played Me a Fool. We were in the glee club together, and we all liked the same kind of music, so we just got together one day and say, hey, why don't we start our own group? And that's what we did. And they would come over to my house, and I had a piano at the house there, and we just plug along and bang on the piano and start learning the songs.
So it was then just the three of you, a trio at that time.
Right, that's how we started. And interestingly enough, my father and Nick's father, they had their own Mexican trio that they used to tour around and sing the regular Mexican songs.
That's interesting. Now, they would have been more of the era maybe of like Lala Guerrero?
Yes, right around that era.
Then you had your trio, you enjoyed the singing. Did you then kind of progress to going out and performing at some local venues?
Yes, that's exactly what we did. We were 14, 15 years old at the time. And so my mother used to drive us around, and she got us a couple of venues close by. Our first performance was a talent show at in a park in Baldwin Park, California. Right after that, we heard that there was a dance hall down the road there, and it was called Betty's Barn, and that's where a lot of the groups used to go and perform. And we went there one night and hooked up with Joe Houston, who was playing that night, and we asked him if we could sing along with him, and he invited us up, and we sang a couple of songs with him, and that's how we got started.
So remind me what year that would have been.
Oh, that would have probably been around 1957.
Those were the first couple of gigs that you had. Where did you take it from there?
Well, actually, what we did then is we were singing at parties and school dances, and we heard this one band was a local band that used to play at the El Monte Legion Stadium. It was Bill Destro and the Destinies. At that time, we were known as the Pretenders.
Mm-hmm.
When we first started out, we were the Pretenders. So we went and auditioned with him, and he took us to the El Monte Legion Stadium. We played at Long Beach Municipal Auditorium, Harmony Park Ballroom in Anaheim. Those were all the big venues in the area, and we would sing along with his band. At that time, we were at the Long Beach Municipal Auditorium. That night was headlined by Preston Epps, Mr. Bongo Rock.
Yeah, Bongo Rock and Bongo Parties, everything Bongo, I think.
Yeah, right. Well, he was the headliner that night at the Long Beach Municipal Auditorium. After we finished singing, we came down, and this man came up to us. His name was Norty Beckman. He had owned a record shop on Fairfax in Los Angeles, and he wanted to be our manager. So we signed with him, and at that time he told us that there were a couple of Pretender groups already out, one on the East Coast and one on the West Coast, and we'd be best to change our name, and he suggested the Storytellers. And so we took it, and we signed on with him, and That's when we recorded You Played Me a Fool.
How did he come up with the storytellers?
We had been talking about that ourselves, and we haven't had contact with him in years, so I really don't know exactly how he came up with the name. It was kind of a catchy name, and but we liked it, and we decided to take it.
Well, and I think certainly at the time it was different, which is good.
Yes, it was.
So you took that name and you went in, and tell me the two sides of the record then.
The A side was You Played Me a Fool, and that was written by Nick Delgado, and he was the lead on that. And then the flip side was Hey Baby. It was kind of an up tune.
Did you guys play all the instruments on those?
Oh, no, we didn't. In fact, very interesting. We went in the studio, and it was a big building. It looked like a barn inside. And we had a band called Freddie Flynn and the Flashes. Well, they recorded that night, and I don't know if you've ever heard of the record that they put out. It was called Greenstamps.
The only record that I know of called Greenstamps isn't the same one. It was by a group called the T-Birds, and it was the Greenstamps, but it's a completely different song. That's very interesting.
Yes, it is. We were the only group to record that night, and this was all under Norty Beckman's label. He had about four different labels. He put Freddie Flynn and the Flashes on Lyric label, and we were on Stack label. There was a singer called Jesse Davis, and he used bobolink.
Mm-hmm. Didn't he also have a Zenith label?
A Zenith. No, that's what it was. It was Zenith.
All right, so you got a record out, pressed up by, I don't know, was it Zenith first and then Stack?
Actually, it just came out on Stack. However, for some reason, there was a few of the labels were pressed on Zenith. And I had just recently noticed that what happened was Nick had a copy of one of the records on Zenith, and the one I have is on Stack.
Hmm.
It's funny because the three original storytellers, we only have one copy of our record.
That happens, though. So you've got the record out, and what about airplay?
It was played locally, and you know, a lot of our friends and family would go to the dances, and they would hear it on the radio local. It didn't get real big, but you know, it got a lot of airplay.
Who were the people that were playing it? Do you remember?
Oh, let's see. There was a disc jockey called Rudy Marini in the evening. The Huggy Boy had played it a few times on his show late in the evening from Dolphins of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
A few other local DJs. Mm. But it would get mostly played in the evening, on the evening shows.
So that had to make you feel pretty good.
Oh, yes, it did. Got to hear our own voices on the radio.
It's not every group that could go to the studio and cut a record, you know?
Right. Yeah, we were pretty fortunate that way.
So then once you had your record out, you had to promote it, right?
Yes, we did. Yeah, we took it around to the different radio stations, and, you know, of course, we performed it at the, you know, all the venues that we sang at, and, you know, it was a pretty big requested record when it was performed.
Was that still just the three of you, or what was the lineup when that recording took place?
When we recorded, we brought in two other singers to sing with us. They sang on the recording. In fact, interestingly enough, Norty Beckman, our manager, had a little part in You Played Me a Fool also. He sang a couple of ooh-oohs in there.
So who were the other two singers that you brought in?
One was named Jesse Otis, and the other fellow was Ray Bias.
What was the agreement? Did you plan to record another song after this one?
Yes, we did, actually. That was kind of interesting, because that was led us to kind of disband the group for a while, because what happened was Norty took us to the studio. We auditioned a song. Actually, it was 1,000 Stars.
Mm-hmm.
When they heard it, they came out, said, you know, that's a very good song, but that's not what we're looking for right now. And if you have any other songs, you know, come back and see us, blah, blah, blah. And so a few months later, we heard the song on the radio by Kathy Young and the Innocents.
Right.
And it was the same people that we auditioned for that put out the record.
Hmm.
Of course, it wasn't our song to begin with. You know, we would sing that a lot at the dances that we performed at. And the people, you know, they kept encouraging us, hey, why don't you record that? You know, so we tried. It just didn't work out for us.
I've noticed that there's a couple of other groups that were named the Storytellers. Did you have any kind of contact, or were they related to your group at all?
The only relation was right after that, I went in the Army, and this group kind of broke up. But our manager, Norty Beckman, I understand that he put out a couple of records with the Storyteller group.
I read somewhere that the label had a duo by the name of Hugo and Bobby Gerstey. Does that ring a bell at all?
Oh, Gersel.
Oh, Gersel. I'm sorry.
Actually, yes. Hugo Gersel was Freddie Flynn of Freddie Flynn and the Flashes.
Okay. What do you think was the biggest show or the most exciting show that you went to based on your recording?
It was El Monte Legion Stadium. I think at that time the Shields were performing, the Olympics. trying to remember some of the other groups, but...
The El Nani Legion Stadium shows were the biggest and the best for you.
Right, right. Mm. Yeah, because, you know, a lot of our following would go there.
So is there anything that I may have missed during the interview that you want to talk about?
The only thing is that, like I said, after that we kind of had broken up and we didn't get back together again as a group until maybe, 1980, 89, when our high school was having their 40th reunion. And one of your frequent listeners, I think it was Mary Wood,
mm-hmm.
We worked at the post office together. Anyway, she had the principal in the office there, and they were getting things ready for the anniversary. And she had mentioned to the sister about our group, that we had graduated from the school. So the sister contacted us and asked if we would perform. And so we agreed to, and so we started practicing. We got a couple of other people in there in the group to make it a fivesome. Anyway, as we were preparing for the school function, I was listening to a DJ on the radio at that time, Steve Probst, out of Long Beach, and he was playing a lot of the music. He was bringing the music back. And so he had played Green Stamps by Freddie Flynn. And at that time, I called Steve on the phone, and I told him who I was and about our group. And he got all excited, and he says, oh, you know, we have this doo-wop society here in Southern California that's promoting a lot of the groups from the past and bringing them back. Would you like to be a part of it and perform? And so, you know, we were more than happy to do it, and that's how we started going around and singing again. With that, we met this man named Bruce Patch, who at that time had a record label called the Classic Artist.
Mm-hmm.
He signed us up, and we recorded for him, and we put about three or four records for him.
The whole deal was great, you know, because there were so many artists, not just from Los Angeles either, just all over, that he was able to get to come back in the
right.
studio and record. And
Mark Sylvia of the Tune Weavers.
Yeah.
She was from Boston.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's just clear across the country. It was nice that it was able to get all those people and get some recordings done. I think it was an excellent project.
It was. And with that, we were able to perform at Universal Amphitheater. In fact, we sang twice, two different times, with the Classic New York Doo-Wop Show. And that was very thrilling for us.
So what are you doing now, then?
Now I've retired, and and we're still singing.
Well, Al, thanks so much for joining me on the show tonight. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Well, Brian, it was my pleasure. It was my pleasure. And I'd love to do it again sometime. And, you know, hopefully, maybe someday we can meet in person.
Sounds good.